a rainy day. I'm happy to be with you. There are some teachers who tell us that the purpose of life is to unfold spiritually. This is why you came here. When I say to you, there is no purpose to life and you never came here. That's the end.
Bye bye, everyone. You never were.
You think I'm kidding? You don't exist. So why am I talking to you?
Yeah, you should have your head examined.
What head?
When you lose your family.
The truth is that you are not what you think you are. Nothing is what you think it is. There is nothing that really exists the way it appears. I know it does sound strange and funny when you first think about this. You can bet your life you feel alive. You feel as if things are happening to you in your affairs. You believe you're going through certain circumstances. Yet who feels this? Not you. You really have no life. When you begin to think on these terms, and you begin to really feel what I'm saying to you, that you really do not exist, you have no purpose, there is no spiritual unfoldment, and you do not have to achieve anything, think how free this makes you. You're totally free. There's nothing that binds you. There's nothing that holds you down or up. You have absolute freedom. Of course, it is only when you begin to think that the trouble starts. So we get back to the mind again. Why do we talk about a mind? It doesn't exist, you know that. You have no mind. You are mindless, or you're out of your mind, whatever the case may be. Yet you do not believe me. If you believed me, you would awaken and be free. You say to yourself, that sounds good. But I've got all kinds of troubles and problems. I've got lack and limitation and sickness and all kinds of junk in my life. Have you now? My friends, you have absolutely nothing wrong with you. You have no life as it appears. You have no purpose. You do not exist. You are absolute zero. Yet you really want to exist, don't you? You want to exist because you're afraid that if you find out you do not exist, you go stark raving mad. The person who believes they exist. Yeah, this would never happen. So if you really discover that you don't exist, I don't mean when you tell yourself I do not exist intellectually, where you feel in your body and you feel pain and you feel problems, but you keep saying I do not exist. You're fooling yourself when you do this. And we want to avoid fooling ourselves. But if you really knew what you were saying, when you realize that you do not exist at all, then you would turn into omnipresence. When you do not exist, existence exists by itself. The absolute reality is existence, but not the kind of existence that we're used to. We're used to existence in form. When we say something exists, we think it has a form, or it has to have a form. Whereas true existence, real existence, has no form, has no shape, has no qualities as we know it. But yet it's alive. But not with the life we think about. Not with the life that we know. There is a life, there is an existence that is totally ineffable. An existence that you really are and you've always been. There never was a time when you were not. Yet words cannot describe this existence. There are no words that can describe this. Yet you are alive. You are alive not as a human being. You are alive not as a thing or as object. You are alive as consciousness. Pure consciousness. But can you ever know that consciousness? Can you ever discover that consciousness? Can you ever become that consciousness? Can you never just be? Only when you let go of thought. Only when you stop thinking. Will reality express itself? Will reality present itself? Only when there is no thought, there is no movement, there is no pressure, when there is absolute stillness, will this real reality express itself. It is beyond anything we can ever imagine. There is nothing in this universe that can help you. There is nowhere you can go to find reality, to find this truth. There is no one who can really give it to you. It comes at the strangest times. You may be staring out the window, and all time stops. This happens to most of us. We stare out the window, we forget about ourselves, we forget about our environment, at that time reality is presenting itself. But what you do, you go back into your old space. When you think you're daydreaming. And you don't want to get caught daydreaming. So you return to your old self. The one with the problems. The one with the body. The one with the world and the universe. Yet when I say to you, the universe does not exist, the world does not exist, and you do not exist, this sounds like the ravings of a madman. And it is. How many of us can have an experience when they find out that they do not exist? And no one else exists either. I don't really know why I had this experience. I wasn't prepared for it. I didn't ask for it. Yet it came by itself. Therefore, we can begin to understand that there is something else. This is the good news. Where masters, way-showers, sages can make so-called humanity feel good by explaining to them there is no death, don't worry. You will never die. It takes a load off when you begin to understand that you can never die. The real you was never born. The real you does not subsist. The real you is beyond the senses. Beyond taste, touch, see, hear, and feel. The real you is not even the observer or the witness. It is beyond the witness. It is beyond the observer. It is something so gorgeous, so beautiful, so grand, so exquisite. This is what we call God. And you are that. When you identify with the material world, you deny your reality. The greater the identification with the material world, the deeper you're sucked into this Maya, this illusion. It makes you believe things are real, all around you, makes you believe confusion, human harmony, or reality. When you give up thinking, when you surrender your mind and your body, when you surrender your affairs, you are at peace. As you go deeper into your affairs and into your so-called material life, you live a completely different life in a completely different world, called the material world. Yet this material world does not exist. It has no validity. It is like the water in the mirage. Look at yourself. No matter how many times I tell you this, you still believe you are the personal self. Having to struggle to survive. Having to fight for survival. Yeah, it's really simple, easy to overcome this kind of feeling, to transcend the feelings of survival, basic instinct, to live in the world by right identification. All you have to do is accept yourself as absolute awareness. Accept yourself as absolute awareness. You do this not by affirming that you're absolute awareness, but by letting go of the attachment to person, place, or thing. As you negate the whole world, the whole universe, the absolute awareness, which you really are, comes into play by itself. This consciousness is awakened as you. And you begin to feel omnipresence. You begin to feel total freedom. Those things that used to annoy you in your everyday experiences no longer have the power to do so. Yet most people are satisfied having a so-called mediocre good life. They forget it's going to end sometime. They forget all things are temporary. They forget this too will pass. But people hold on to the goodness that seems to come into their lives sometime as if it were going to remain forever. Nothing remains forever. As long as you identify with the material world, you have to suffer. Just the term material world is enough to make you know you have to suffer, because everything material is eventually torn down and disappears. If you would only give up all your longings, all your desires, all of your cravings, even your craving, your desire to become enlightened, even your desire to become free and liberated, this is a false desire, since you're already free anyway. You're already liberated. There is nothing you have to do to become liberated. You do not have to practice sadhana, spiritual disciplines. You and I both know people who have been practicing spiritual disciplines for centuries. It makes you passive. It makes you dumb. But it liberates you. Liberation comes by itself. There's nothing you have to do to become liberated. There are no tests you have to take. There are no worshipping services you have to do. You don't have to have a guru. You just have to let go. Let go of everything. You sort of have to have an answer as if I don't give a damn. But not in a sarcastic, arrogant way. In a loving way. When you have the attitude, let the world do to me as it may, it makes no difference what experiences I'm going through. It doesn't make any difference whether I'm sick or healthy, rich or poor, happy or sad. It doesn't make one bit of difference. When you begin to think like this, you're on the right path. Stop thinking about yourself so much. Stop trying to improve your life. Leave yourself alone. Nature will take care of you. You will always know what to do. But stop thinking about it. Stop thinking about your health, your position in life, your relationships. When you stop thinking about these things, they will automatically improve and be better than you ever so they could be. Do not outline a plan that you think you have to live by. Do not believe that you have to live a certain way have a certain income, have a certain family, live in a certain country. Leave these things alone. Everything will take care of itself. Leave yourself alone. Do not fight yourself. You're fighting yourself every time you believe something is wrong. You're fighting yourself when you believe somebody's trying to do something to you. Or there are bad people out there. Or good people out there. Or any kind of people out there. Out there is only a projection of your mind. Otherwise there is no out there. All the things that appear to be out there is yourself. You are that self that contains all of the people, all of the kingdoms of this earth, the galaxies, the gods. It is all contained within yourself. You give it power by the way you think about it. Your thoughts project itself as the world, as the universe. And you find yourself living in a world with certain people around you, and not remembering that you have projected this yourself. You get involved in your own projections. And you worry endlessly. You try to make things a certain way. Whereas what you really should do is allow everything to go back into your heart center. And then watch and observe from where the eye rises. From where does the eye thought rise? This is what you should watch. The eye thought, as it begins to rise from the heart and becomes the world, then you allow the eye thought to go back into the heart. And you become free. There is such happiness, such joy, such peace, such love. Everything is so beautiful.
That song reminds me of questions that I wanted to ask you. For almost where you want to go. Zen masters, and there's a few back in the 1400s, claimed that going to see the pavilion girls, which I guess were the prostitutes of those times, greatly deepened his enlightenment. He sort of happily embraced bodily existence, especially after his enlightenment. And I wondered if you could address that. This also means to enlightenment. What it is I want to draw you into is just a little bit about the role of perhaps sex in, you know, all of this. Because a lot of teachers talk about, you know, sex getting in the way and et cetera, et cetera.
The only thing that gets in the way is your mind. Sex is either good or bad. It exists. It is part of the role of the aspirant. Do not deny it. Do not praise it. There have been many Zen masters who were enlightened and continue to have sex. There were many who didn't. It's all part of the world. It's all part of Maya. It's neither good nor bad. Sometimes an enlightened being will have sex for teaching purposes. You have to be careful with this, or it makes you think you have license to do what you want. If you surrender your body, and surrender your sexual desires, your urges, then something will happen inside of you. To make you go higher in life, to transcend the world. You will find at that time that if it's part of the plan for you to have sex, you will. If it's part of the plan for you not to have sex, you won't. What I'm trying to say, there's no such thing as having to have it or not having to have it. It is something that takes place in each individual's mind. And it's up to them to live with themselves and to understand where they're coming from and to have complete control of themselves. Not really for sexual purposes. For teaching purposes.
What are they teaching?
They're teaching that they can have this feeling without having sex. That the true feelings, the true orgasm is yourself. You want that. And you can live in an orgasmic state, all of the time.
Shouldn't this be the new meatless plan?
Why not?
Yeah. You've been with Jerry Brown too long.
Well said.
Never think you have to give anything up. And never think you have to indulge in anything. When you are free, what you do will come naturally. It will happen by itself. But when you think I have to have sex, or go crazy, then you got a problem. When you begin to understand your true nature, the life that you really are, all those things will take care of themselves. You'll be able to have it and not to have it. But it will take care of itself. Everybody is different. There's no one way about it. There are no set rules. It depends where you're coming from, what you're doing, what your purpose is. Sex for sex's sake is a waste of time. But sex for raising your consciousness is interesting. As in tantric yoga. But all this is part of the mind. Therefore, know yourself. Know who you are. And you will know what to do. I was going to say, why do you want things to make sense? Because you want things to make sense. This is why you're caught up in Maya. Break up your thinking. Be spontaneous. Do not believe things have to come a certain way or be a certain way. Or follow a certain trend. The more you're shocked in your system, the faster you awaken. So all the things that shock you are good. As things are going too mediocre, straight, no shocks, you can't grow. All the shocks that come into your life are for your benefit. So all is well. Bomb.
Oh, you said in the self there's exquisite bliss and joy and love. But I've heard you in the past say that there's nobody left to experience anything. So what is it? If there's no eye to experience, if there's no mind to experience it, what is it that feels that joy, bliss, love?
There's nobody left to experience anything. And there's nobody really feels it. But the love, the peace, the joy is self-existent. It's just something that is, that you're not really experiencing as an I. But there's something there that is self-sufficient.
Is it non-experiential?
It's non-experiential.
But couldn't you say rather than feeling it, you are it? You are joy, you are...
You can say that, but why should I?
Why indeed?
That's what he says every day.
So it's really the self that's the perfect fulfillment, joy and bliss and peace.
But it's not the self as you know it.
Not the self in the small s, but the self in the capital S.
You don't know what that self is. So it couldn't be that. It is something so beyond those things that there are no words, no thoughts, no feelings, nothing to describe it.
But yet it is peace, joy, and love, and bliss. It's not just like in Buddhism, void, like everything is zero. There's nothing there.
No, it's beyond that.
Something wonderful, something eternal.
So
nobody down to enjoy it. You're sneaking yourself in the picture. You aren't there, Bob. Forget it.
It's wonderful, but it's all wasted.
Yeah. Don't talk.
Bob wants to enjoy it.
But you enjoy it. I mean, you don't enjoy it as the mind, but there's still that happiness there.
There's something there.
Being completely obliterated in
this unconsciousness. No. Something is truly there.
And that's an orgasmic bliss, too.
That's labeling it again.
That was 10 minutes
ago. Well, I got
ago.
My brother's T-Touch label maker.
If you want it to be an orgasmic experience, then go be it.
But the whole physical sexual thing isn't it like a step down version of sex? Of the bliss of the
sex? Anything that you can figure out in your mind is a step down. Whatever you can talk about and describe is a step down.
Robert, I don't have a clue. Do you?
A clue?
About it.
We used to have a game called Clue.
The guru did it. What is it?
Yes. There's a real thoughts and feelings are not real. Nothing is covering nothing. There are no coverings. There is nothing which is real, and there is nothing which is not real. None of these things exist whatsoever. So the unreal is not covering that which is real. And why waste time working on illusions? Who's working on illusions? Who's wasting time? To believe you're wasting time is an illusion. Who's doing all those things? It is yourself that thinks like this. Transcends the self that thinks this way. There are no covers. Thoughts and feelings appear real as long as you believe you are the body. When you realize you're not the body, there's no one left to be able to feel thoughts and things. Therefore, there is no cover that is covering the reality. There is only the reality. There is only that which is real. Nothing else exists.
Robert, that's not my question, but I wonder if the person isn't referring to working on illusions as doing sadhana.
Well, we discussed this. Sadhana is only necessary for the person who does not understand self-inquiry and does not want to wake up. Then they practice sadhana. Sadhana will eventually lead some people to the place where the mind is quiet and still and peaceful. But most of the time people get involved in sadhana, get caught up in sadhana, make sadhana their life's work. And this is a hindrance, many times, to awakening. Awakening, again, comes by itself.
So self-inquiry is not sadhana?
No. Self-inquiry is self-inquiry. Is a thing by itself.
I'm calling it a spiritual discipline now.
It's not even a spiritual discipline. You exist. When you exist, you can question yourself, who exists? That's not really a discipline. And it's not sadhana. It is something that you do for yourself to awaken.
Well, what would you call it then?
Nothing. Do not give it a label or a name. It's all of it. If you call it sadhana, you get mixed up with mantras and pranayamas and yogas and everything else.
Those things are done by a doer.
Exactly. Somebody has to do these things. You have pointed out that we are always thinking about ourselves, except when watching TV, etc. But certainly that must differ from the non-thinking of self that you speak of. And if so, how? When you're watching TV, you're not thinking of your physical self. You lose yourself. But then you become what's on the TV. You're part of the program. You're part of what you're watching. It's not like losing yourself to the self. You're becoming sort of dumbified by watching the TV or by reading a book or a newspaper. It is true you forget about yourself for a while. But since you're thinking about something else, you become what you're reading and what you're watching. The proper method is to be still without TVs, without books, without anything, and to confront yourself. Confront yourself totally, completely, by observing your thoughts and watching what they're doing to you, how they control you, how they have power over you. And as you observe this, as you watch this, you inquire, to whom does this come? Who's going through all these things? Who has all these things going on in your life? Then everything slows down. And you become still and peaceful. You have said to do self-inquiry each time a thought arises, and that the spaces between thoughts will become longer. But what about body sensations? They seem to be continuous. Are they considered thoughts? Body sensations are the same as thoughts. As you keep inquiring, who am I? And you stay in the space between the answer, between the question. Then the body thoughts become less and less, and the thoughts become less and less. It's the same thing. The feelings and the thoughts lessen as you practice self-inquiry. You ask, who does this come to? It comes to me. I think this. Who am I? And when you keep still, the body sensations will slow down as well as your thoughts. And soon there will be no body sensations, there will be no thoughts. There will be nothing. So body sensations are the same as thoughts. When one goes, the other goes also. You cannot have body sensations without thoughts. There has to be a thought about the body sensation. So when the thoughts dissipate, the body sensations will also dissipate. It is said that the sage is a mirror. Would you explain how that works? When you look at a sage, you are seeing yourself. Therefore, what you see as yourself, you will see as the sage. The sage takes shape to everyone in accordance to their thoughts. That's why the example of the sage is like a mirror. For you always see yourself when you look at the sage. For instance, if you are a thief, you will see in the sage a thief. if you are a loving person, you will see in the sage a loving person. Whatever you are, you will see that in the sage. But then again, the sage reflects back himself or herself. So if you really look at the sage deeply, you will go beyond your feelings and your actions and what you are, and you will feel the sage's peace and the sage's love and the sage's joy, which will transcend all of your stuff that's going on in your life. You will begin to see the one self. If you look at the sage deep enough, you will see the one self, the absolute reality. But if you just glance at the sage, just look at the sage once in a while, you will feel the sage as yourself again, but your material self, and the self that you think you are, and all the attributes that you have, bad, good, and indifferent, you will also do to the sage. But again, as you stare at the sage deeper and deeper, and you think of the sage deeper and deeper, you will bypass all that. You will go deeper inside the sage, and you will become the sage yourself.
Robert, long time ago you told a story, and I can't, unfortunately, remember the details, but it was something that happened to you in which you were confronted by someone who was potentially violent, and that was, there was potential for a violent situation. And I remember you said that he looked at you and somehow was able to transcend from the look you gave him whatever he was feeling, and he later thanked you.
Oh, yes.
So could you tell that story and then tell how it ties in with when he looked at you, if he were about to do something violent or whatever, what did he see? Did he see his true self in you?
This happened on the subway in New York. Everybody was hanging on to the straps. It was rush hour. And this fellow was drunk. He was bothering everybody and being real obnoxious and rude. And he looked at me and I stared at him. And all of a sudden he became still and quiet and peaceful. And the next train stop, he looked at me and he said, "Thank you," and got off the train. But apparently what had happened is he was in a drunken stupor where his senses were not working too well, which was to his favor. He was able to see through the surface, through the body, deep into the self. And he was able to feel the peace and the joy that was there. So that's why I said thank you.
So is that an example of where he saw his true self in you?
Something like that. He was able to see himself as a higher person, as a peaceful person, as a happy person. The drinking made him like that. If you were not drunk, you would have only seen the surface, which wouldn't have helped him at all. But because he was so drunk, he was able to let go of the surface and go deep with them. And this helped him.
So you advocate getting drunk.
Yes.
Sometimes
it works for the liquor industry.
Sometimes it helps.
Your other media plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. They need you. Shenley would pay you high. Can you figure that one out, Fred?
Yeah, but the alcoholic condition mind.
Exactly.
But he couldn't transcend his poison liver.
Who knows what happened to the spotted liver?
There really is something about that, isn't there?
Yes.
I've been looking for God all my life, and I finally found it in a bottle.
that was a genie, not God.
Is that a personal testimony?
Yeah. I know.
What are you drinking, Jay?
Perfume.
No, he's drunk some more than
people
don't
pour out the bottle on there.
They don't
find
it.
Right.
Yeah, that's
a new path. Well,
okay,
yeah,
we've got
there's the path of no path.
The way to God is through alcohol.
That's possible.
No, I think
we'll find out. Time for you to say something, Fred. You're the old alcoholic.
Don't give him any ideas.
He worked at it for years.
So you're talking about thought. And Krishnamurti says thought is always old.
Always what?
Old.
Old.
Thought can never see anything new. Would you agree with that?
Sure. Of course, what else would you think about except the past?
Thought is responsive memory, to use the past phrase.
Sure, that's true. Every time you think, you can only think about the experiences you've had in your life.
And comparing them with what's going on right now.
Even when you think about the future, I suppose it's based on past.
Of course. It's all based on the past. For thought to be fresh and new, it has to be solid.
It comes from another place. But you can't think reality. You can't think reality.
No, you can't think reality at all. Because there is no thought in reality. Thoughts are only about the past. When you live in the now, you don't think. That's why we're told to live in the moment, in the now. Not in the future, not in the past.
There was another account that seems like Mozart.
What about Mozart?
Great artists that where they're pulling it from, that way.
Mozart would hear a total symphony in one moment. And then he'd rush and write it down in time.
All great thinkers, people like that, were very spontaneous. They just were able to imagine everything going on in the now. They saw everything like Henry said in the moment. There was no past, there was no future. But to write a symphony sometimes took time. But it all came in a split second.
Time is a fabrication of the mind. Anyway, time is a
lie. Space time is a lie. It doesn't exist. It appears to exist because you believe you're the body. When the body notion is conquered, there's no time, there's no space.
Father, how is it that thought is a motion in consciousness? Why is it that that little motion in consciousness obscures consciousness of reality?
Why is there that motion in consciousness? Why do you say thought is emotion and consciousness?
Isn't that what it is? It's a movement.
In consciousness, there is no movement. Consciousness is self-reliant, self-sustaining. It knows nothing about a thought. The thought comes from the ego, from the Maya. Consciousness has no thoughts.
But if consciousness is all there is, how can thought be outside of all there is?
So it's not outside of all of this, so it's part of the ego, part of the non-existence. So it doesn't really exist, it's like the body doesn't really exist. And the world doesn't really exist, the mind doesn't really exist. And karma doesn't really exist. So thought doesn't really exist.
Motion doesn't really exist.
That's
why it's an illusion.
An illusion doesn't really exist.
How can what doesn't really exist appear at all in the first place?
It doesn't appear.
How can what isn't appear to be?
It doesn't appear that there's nothing to be.
Can it appear to appear?
Yes, there you go.
Who asked that question?
The appearance.
Don't let the appearance get rid of the appearance. Well, the whole teaching is paradoxical. For in truth, nothing appears, nothing exists. And we said in the beginning, there is no appearance that exists.
And this is the flat-out bottom-line truth, from which there is no other.
Exactly.
Not even.
Well, all right, we'll throw that out, too.
There is no Henry.
Thank God for that.
But I like your appearance.
By what?
Your appearance.
That's your illusion. Well, have your illusions.
When I find God, I'm going to kill him.
The other way around, he's going to kill you. You're a dumb duck, but you don't know
it. How are you going to do it if you're on the spot?
With answer.
If you meet the Buddha on the road.
Yeah, right. I think it's a cruel joke.
For whom?
Very cruel. You love your stuff, man.
Speak for yourself.
Cluttering up 10 years later. Losing the world.
The Buddha's in the room.
Where?
I'm at the hotel.
The Buddha is the room.
Anyone else like to entertain us? A song, a dance, a pie in the face. Okay, Mary has an announcement.
Yeah, I have the transcript. It's got rain down just a little bit this far. This is the number 58, the silent word. And I have four copies. One lady asked me to hold one for her. So I have four copies to give out. So give me a copy if you like. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much.